This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar-Free. First-round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
You must remember this as the podcast dedicated to stories from the secret and forgotten histories of 20th century Hollywood. Stories of sex, murder, institutional racism, bad men, sad women, fascist gossip columnists, and much more. Our new season is called The Old Man is Still Alive, and it's about directors like Alfred Hitchcock and John Ford who got started in the silent era, but were still making movies in the psychedelic 60s. Follow and listen to You Must Remember This on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a great picture with Andrew Barry and Jimmy Haslam mid-conversation with our next guest. You hear him every week on this program of the MMQB. The great Albert Breer joins us now on the Fan Hotline. Albert, welcome back to the show, bud.
How are you guys doing? That thing's gotten way more mileage. I don't know how it got out there, but it's definitely out there now.
We're assuming that they just told you their entire plans for 2026. Is that right. Correct?
Right. Or I was just introducing them to my wife, Emily, and my kids, Drew and Steve. And I can report that they were very gracious and very, very nice to my kids. So it was a good interaction. We were just kind of saying hello and catching up. Always good to see those guys.
I mean, that sounds good. We kind of wanted a little bit more juice than that, Albert.
Yeah, we were
being
hoping
honest.
Like they're really big on Arch Manning.
Yeah.
I mean, I also may have had like a few drinks in the parking lot before that. So, that's another interesting part of the whole experience. This is my first game with my kids there. So, I think part of them, part of their thought process during the day was like, I don't know why my dad finds it so appealing to stand around in a parking lot with his friends, but yeah.
You have enough Capri Suns, they'll get it.
Yeah, they'll learn one day. Yeah. Parking lot with friends is about as good as life gets, Albert.
Yeah.
For sure. It was a great week, and I'll say this, like the atmosphere in the stadium is off the charts. Like that third and fourth down at the end of the game, I don't know if I've ever been in there when it was louder. It was unbelievable.
Albert, there's been a lot made of Jimmy Haslam and Andrew Barry and Kevin Stefanski being at this game, and then the Browns cavalry going down to LSU and Clemson with two quarterbacks who are very likely to be top 10, top 15, top 20 picks in 2026. The Browns conveniently having two picks. I looked at it as just like, well, the Browns have two first rounders next year. Of course, they're going to be more involved in the scouting process this year, this early. A lot of people took it just to mean the quarterback position. Is any of that a reach at this point?
Yeah, I don't think it's quarterback specific. I think maybe like the involvement of the owner would be like, that's the one thing I would say is like sometimes when the owner goes on trips, it could signify that. I mean, it also like for some owners is just an opportunity to get around their scouts, and you know, it can be a good trip just as far as, you know, bonding with your football people. And look, like they weren't the only ones. I mean, there are a lot of GMs that will go out on the road that specific weekend for a couple reasons. First of all, their season hasn't started, right? So they have a little more flexibility to do it. Since the cutdown isn't that weekend anymore, There is not the amount of work for them to do at home than there used to be. And the players are mandated to be off, right? Like, there's rules in place. I think it's, you got to give them something like 4 or 5 days off in that window. So you can't even work with the players if you had a choice, if you had any choice to, you know? So, like, I know a lot of teams that were out there. In fact, like, the Giants, the Bills, the Packers, like, there were a lot of teams that were out there over the weekend. And, like, a lot of guys, like, I would say, using their owners' private jets to get from one place to the other efficiently. And I think that was a pretty popular trip on Saturday among NFL teams to be in Columbus there at noon and then hop on the private jet and go down to Clemson to see Clemson LSU, because obviously those four teams are all going to have a lot of guys that are going to get picked early next year.
So what'd you make of Arch Manning? Should we have expected it to look as rough as it did, and were we just all blind to that?
Yeah, I think it's a little unfair to the kid too. Don't you guys? I mean, I've said this like a bunch of different places today, and I really feel strongly about this. Like, there's nothing he could have done in those two starts last year that should have made anybody like project him to be the first overall pick. Now, he may wind up being that, you know, we'll see. But this rush to be early on that stuff is a little ridiculous. I mean, teams I've talked to, like, the baseline number of starts that you'd like to have for a college quarterback, and this is the baseline, is 25, right? And the reason that number is what it is because the quarterback needs to build up a library of things that he's seen, different defenses that he's seen, different adjustments he's had to run, all that different stuff, right? And then, you know, like, you have a variety of opponents. So now the scouts have a chance to see you against different looks and different types of teams. Those teams now have the chance to adjust to you, right? Like, so once you put 5 or 6 games on tape, now they've got some tendencies on you. So now, like, they're going to attack you a little bit differently, and they're going to force you to play to some of your weaknesses, which is going to show another level of your game. So there's all this stuff that you've got to gather as an NFL team on a quarterback that can only be done if a guy starts a lot of games, right? Like, and you have that body of work. And that didn't exist on Arch, you know? So, I mean, what did he play? UTSA and Mississippi State, which was last in the SEC last year, right? Like, those are the only two full games we saw from Arch Manning. I believe he had not thrown a pass outside of Austin, Texas, a college pass outside
That's right.
of Austin, Texas,
yeah. mm-hmm.
until Saturday, right? So, like, I think this level of expectation was a little insane. I think a lot of the people that were building him up are the same ones that are tearing him down now, because that's the game we play with all of them. And I think, like, you can, like, see a lot of good in the kid by seeing how he handled that, right? Like, I don't know if you guys saw the Yahoo story on him that ran, like, a few weeks ago, but it was an interesting quote, like, in there. Like, so Michael Taft, who's one of their leaders, he's a safety on the Texas team, close friends with Arch, so that Arch said to him, "I can't wait until I throw a pick, and everybody who says I'm the best player is going to say I'm the worst player," right? And there's a self-awareness to that that I think was, like, really cool. You know, and then I think even in the game, like, I don't know, I felt like he showed some resiliency. Like, there were a lot of spots where he probably didn't know what the hell he was looking at, because they did a really good job, Ohio State did, of disguising. But he kind of rolled with the punches and made a couple high-level throws at the end of the game, the one for the touchdown, the one down the sideline to the tight end on the last drive. Like, it wasn't perfect. Even the last throw, I don't know, he's getting whipped around by a defensive lineman, and he finds a way to get that ball out and at least give his tight end a chance, you know. Now, unfortunately, his tight end had Caleb Downs tackling him, you know, and but otherwise, like, if that had been another player, maybe the kid fights and gets the first down, and we're talking about this differently. So, I think the situation Arch was in, like, there's probably a handful of first round picks in Ohio State's defense. You had a Super Bowl winning defensive coordinator there, and absolutely zero tape on what Matt Patricia was going to do at the college level. I actually think Arch showed some resilience. It wasn't great. You know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you he was awesome, but, you know, I do think it's indicative of the process that all these guys got to go through so they can be prepared for the pros. And so the pros can get a proper read on who they are as players.
Albert, for a lot of reasons, I think there's a segment of fans that took Haslam and Barry and Stefanski, and even not just them being there on Saturday and then being at Death Valley as well, but also, like, the comments about, you know, obviously needing to find that franchise quarterback. Some have taken that to mean that the Browns are already planning for 2026, maybe at the expense of 2025. I'm just curious how we kind of thread those two lines of there isn't an obvious franchise quarterback in the building in 2025 and the need to get one in 2026 where you still have to let this season play out.
Well, let me start here. Like, I do think like that, like I've said this to you guys a few times, like for Kevin Stefanski and his staff to maintain, to maintain the trust of the locker room, they're going to have to give those guys the best shot to win week to week, right? Like, you can't wave the white flag on a season and expect to hold on to the locker room. So, you know, I think on a week-to-week basis, they're going out and trying to win games. But, yeah, there's a planning element to it. And look, like, how often does a third-round pick or a fifth-round pick become your franchise quarterback? I mean, I think it's pretty self-explanatory looking at the depth chart when you see a 40-year-old as a starter, and then you see two rookies that were drafted outside of, what, the top 80 picks, whatever that number is, you know, like that are on the roster. Like, I there's just chances are they're going to be looking for a quarterback in the first round of the draft in April. It's just all you have to do is look at it logistically. And so, of course, they need to be out there. They need to be looking at all the different quarterbacks. They need to be doing all of their homework. And the live exposure part of it is a really important piece of it. So I would say they'd be more worthy of criticism if they weren't doing all of this right now. You know, it's a really important thing. And if you go back and you look, like, right, like I can remember writing stories about the Bills process with Josh Allen and the Chiefs process with Patrick Mahomes. And you go back and you kind of like pull the curtain back on what all those teams did, like going back years before drafting those kids, it's astounding the amount of work that goes into it. And that's what it takes to get it right at that position. You know, I can think of like, so there's this one thing with Mahomes, right, where, you know, Chris Ballard was working for the Chiefs at the time, and he was at Texas Tech on a Saturday night, and this would have been in 2015. And it was like, and anybody knows who Lubbock, it can be freezing cold there with bad winds, all that stuff. It's West Texas, right? And Ballard was there to scout a bunch of players not named Patrick Mahomes. Mahomes is a true freshman. And he watched Mahomes throw the ball, and the ball cut through the wind. And, like, the way it looked on, like, a night when, like, when most quarterbacks wouldn't be able to operate. And that was, like, the first time where it was, like, it got run up the flagpole that this is something maybe we want to keep an eye on. So it's that deep, like, stuff like that. And, you know, I think the Browns going out and looking at Garrett Nussmeier and Cade Klubnik and whoever else this weekend, I think it's just them doing the work that needs to be done when it comes to trying to get it right at that position.
Yeah, and then as the season moves on, is it kind of like going to be like what we heard with like Joe Shane with Colorado, where he was basically living there for a stretch? Is it going to be something like that where we find out after the fact how involved they are?
Yeah, but I mean, Joe wasn't just at Colorado. Joe did a lot of stuff. I mean, I did a story on this in the spring. I love digging into that stuff. But I mean, yeah, like Joe was all over the place. You know, Joe was in Oxford, Mississippi. Joe was in Miami. Like, Joe did all the work on all the quarterbacks. So, yeah, I think it's definitely possible that you'll hear about some of that when it comes to, you know, not only like Andrew Berry, but also his like top lieutenants, Glenn Cook, Cat Hickman, like the people that are going to be involved in the decision-making process to get eyes on the kids, you know? I don't know. I mean, this is like the most, if they do wind up taking a quarterback in the first round, that's like the most important decision a general manager can make is who to pick with whatever resources you have to get one in the draft. So yeah, I mean, it doesn't mean Dylan Gabriel or Shedeur Sanders couldn't make it. It just means you're preparing yourself for the likelihood that you will be, you know, drafting one next April. That's all.
Albert Breer of the MMQB on the Fan Hotline. The Micah Parsons trade sent shockwaves throughout the NFL. I know we were pretty surprised because it just plenty of guys have had contract kerfuffles. Plenty of guys have demanded trades. And most of them, if not all of them, have ended up back with their original team on a new contract. Do you think that Micah Parsons trade, could that actually lead and maybe change the NFL in this kind of very modern stance of it doesn't matter, we have all the power? Or do you see this as more of a one-off?
I mean, I think there's an element of like what you're talking about, which is like, you know, I use the term control over workforce. Like that definitely exists with owners, and Jerry's been a real hawk when it comes to that stuff, you know? So I wouldn't poo poo what you're saying. I think that this was like a little bit of a unique situation, just in that, I'd say the way the Cowboys do business, there are some questions you can ask about it, like, and the way they did it the last few years with some players, and it feels like it finally blew up in their face a little bit. That said, I actually think like the Cowboys were thinking big picture with some of this stuff and trying to lean into what Brian Schottenheimer's trying to build there, which he's used the term the greatest culture in America in professional sports. And that's hyperbole probably to some degree, but if you're looking to build that, like, you know, Micah has been an issue in the locker room the last couple of years. So like they tried to sign Micah, but like the decision was made a while ago, like that if we are going to trade Micah, then maybe part of it needs to be leaning into it and like leaning into what Shoddy's been trying to establish here. And sure enough, like the player that they wind up asking for when they're talking to Green Bay is a guy who fits that to a T in Kenny Clark. So I don't know. I mean, it's obviously a huge risk walking away from a player like that. There were reasons why the Cowboys wound up being open to it. And, you know, now, like, we'll see how it goes. Like, I think Micah's going to a place that's going to understand how to use him, and it's probably going to get the most out of him. So, like, there's a chance early on that it's going to look really bad for the Cowboys. But I think for them, this is more of a sort of a long-term play. And, you know, how does Kenny Clark look now? How did the first-round picks would come in look later? And, you know, and then how does the culture that Brian Schottenheimer's trying to build wind up serving them as a team? Because that's obviously a team that's had talent over the years, but the locker room has always been like a little bit different, a little bit sideways. So, you know, I think there's some self-reflection here from a team that hasn't been to a conference title game in almost 30 years, which by the way is the second longest or third longest streak in the league behind only the Dolphins and your Cleveland Browns. And even including the Browns is debatable because when the streak started, it was actually the old Browns that were in the league.
Albert, I want to tap into how you know like the inner workings of the NFL and how things operate. Rashee Rice gets his 6-game suspension, and then I think a lot of people they just kind of thought that the Isaiah Bond and the Judkins news was going to be a day after, 2 days after, because usually when you get one resolution, then it seems like the other guys are somewhere close around there. Is that typically how it goes? Is it just nowhere close to right?
Well, that can be the case. I mean, sometimes you'll see those things bunched up on like holiday weekends. You know what I mean? Like, so they try to dump them so they don't get a lot of attention. So that definitely exists. You know, I think in this case, like with Rashee Rice, the reason you didn't get, you know, conclusions for those situations is mostly because like Rashee Rice wasn't pushing something out at a certain time. It was more they had negotiated a settlement and like when they, you know, came to the resolution that it's going to be 6 games, there was going to be no appeal. And so really there was no reason to wait on it. At least the league didn't feel that way. And so, you know, like they make the announcement of 6 games and then everybody can move on. So, yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying, but I don't think that in this case it had anything to do. I don't think in this case it had anything to do with trying to package anything together. I think it was just, The lawyers came to an agreement and everybody decided it was best just to rip the Band-Aid off and make the announcement.
Albert, we got about 30 seconds here. If Quinshon does sign at some point early in this week, is it too ambitious to suggest he could be on the field on Sunday?
I think so, yeah. I mean, it feels like it would be. Yeah, it feels like that'd be a little much. You know, he was around in the spring, so he has some baseline for the offense, but I would think he'd probably want to give him a little bit longer to ramp him up. If for nothing else, then he needs to get in football shape. You know what I mean? Like, and whatever he's been doing over the last, you know, month and a half, it doesn't necessarily replace going and getting knocked around and getting your body ready to play football.
Albert, great stuff, buddy. Really appreciate you. And again, we'll the nuclear codes from the Browns, we'd like those maybe next week if you can put those in. No, great stuff, buddy. Appreciate you.
All right, thanks, guys. Have a good one.
You too. Albert Breer there on the fan hotline of the MMQB. Great stuff with him. We'll react to what he had to say about the Browns and the path forward in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar-Free. First-round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app, available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
You must remember this as the podcast dedicated to stories from the secret and forgotten histories of 20th century Hollywood. Stories of sex, murder, institutional racism, bad men, sad women, fascist gossip columnists, and much more. Our new season is called The Old Man is Still Alive, and it's about directors like Alfred Hitchcock and John Ford who got started in the silent era, but were still making movies in the psychedelic 60s. Follow and listen to You Must Remember This on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The National Football League returns. Sunday, the Cleveland Browns return against the Cincinnati Bengals. What does this year have in store for our football team? Gentleman who has joined us many times over the years, and we love having him with us, one of the great football guys in our country, in our estimation. He's Robert Mays from the Athletic Football Show, and he joins us on the Fan Hotline. How are you, sir?
Hey, Robert.
Doing well, guys. How you doing?
There good. Is a guy in Guatemala who's pretty good, too, so we're just going out on a limb on that one.
Well, I said our country. I didn't
of course.
Want to leave the Guatemalan guy out.
Well, he's pretty good, though.
Yeah.
Except I can't understand it because I can't.
Robert, I deal with this every day.
Sorry about that.
I apologize.
Listen, I wish my Spanish was better at this point, too. I'd be listening to more Guatemalan football content.
No mas. No mas.
Okay. You got a Browns defense going up against the Cincinnati Bengals. Let's go game specific here. That has had trouble protecting Joe Burrow over the years. Is that how the Browns can beat the Cincinnati Bengals, or should we just think, okay, well, who's in week two?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think those Browns-Bengals games have always been a little weird. You know, I remember 2 years ago, we weren't really sure what to expect. I believe they started in week one against the Bengals in 2023 as well. And we weren't really sure what to expect from that Browns defense. And they just came on like an absolute tornado in that game. And I think really announced what they were going to be that season. And I do think that even with some of the personnel concerns on that side of the ball, we can see a little bit of a bounce back from that team. You know, if you look at some of the underlying numbers about what the Browns defense was in 2024, I mean, down to down, this was still a pretty good defense. Their problem was they didn't create any turnovers and they gave up a just disgusting amount of explosive plays. And that can normalize from year to year. And so I absolutely think there's a world, even with Martin Emerson hurt, even with some of the question marks at linebacker and the defensive line depth, et cetera, that this defense can still be a pretty good unit and maybe surprise a few people.
When you look at the Browns offensive line, I mean, the names to me are all familiar, right? Teller, Posick, Petonio, Jones, right? And Conklin. I don't know what to expect. I really want to believe that they live up to what they've been their career. I'm just super concerned about the way they look, especially with Joe Flacco. If I was Flacco, those are the guys I'd want in front of me, but I'm concerned. What say you?
it's just hard to rely on the health of most of those guys at this point. They've all missed at least a little bit of time over the last couple of years. Obviously, it's been more pronounced with Conklin, but I think the injuries have really slowed Wyatt Teller down. I still feel like if this group stays healthy, they can be a pretty good unit over the course of the year. You know, DeJuan Jones is never going to be a dominant run blocker. It's just not really the style that he plays with. He's a capable pass blocker. And if he can be your fifth best offensive lineman for 17 games because the rest of those guys stay healthy, I do think that this can be a pretty good group. And I think that can be one of the reasons the Browns offense is just more competent than maybe a lot of outside observers think it's going to be. I just think that the issue is not only whether they can stay healthy this year, but when I think about the Browns, I just look at like the two-year outlook and the fact that that entire offensive line is hitting free agency. And that's what makes me a little bit itchy when I just think about the multi-year view of this team.
Robert Mays joining us, his podcast, The Athletic Football Show. Kenny Pickett messes up his hamstring, so much for a quarterback competition for the starting job. Did the Browns do the right thing by trading Kenny Pickett before they had a chance to see him run this offense in anything that resembled a real game?
I think so, because they got a decent return for him. And at this point, I think when you drafted two quarterbacks and you signed Joe Flacco, Kenny Pickett was always a little bit superfluous when it comes to the overall equation for what that quarterback room was supposed to be. I think that with Flacco and the young guys, you have something that he's proven, right? If he's anything, we kind of know what Joe Flacco is, for good or for ill at this point. And so if you want to go with that, you have that. And if you want to see what you have in the young players that are unknowns, you have that. I feel like Kenny Pickett was kind of a backstop that would have been necessary had they not drafted two quarterbacks. And so right now, I still feel like your best chances are, all right, let's have Joe Flacco in there for a little tiny bit of stability. And then when we're ready to start exploring the unknown, we can go to that. And in no part in that timeline is Kenny Pickett really necessary. And so that's why I always felt like if there was one guy that was going to go here, it was probably going to be him.
What's the timeline for you if you're going to change quarterbacks?
You look at those first five or six games, and they're pretty brutal. I mean, the first game is against Cincinnati. We'll see what happens with their defense, but I'm not looking at it in front of me, but I think the next four or five, you got the Lions in there. I think the Ravens are in there. You got the Packers in there. There are some good teams. And so I think that having Flacco in there to just kind of, you know, take his lumps, figure out what this team is over the first five, 6 weeks of the season. And then depending on where you're at, then at both the quarterback position and in the season at large, do you look at what the benefits might be of playing some of the young guys? So I think that we'll probably get to around Halloween or so before that starts happening. But after that, I think if, unless you're really, really rolling, unless you're like a 5-1 team at that point, surprisingly, I still feel like that's probably when we might see the young guys start to play.
Thoughts on Quinshon Judkins and when the league might actually hand down some kind of response, or is it no response, or are the Browns like, is there a problem with signing him to a contract? Is that between the Browns and him, or are they waiting for the league? And if we're waiting for the league, then the Browns also are probably waiting to hear if they're going to say anything about Isaiah Bond, or if they're going to say anything about what Devin Bush.
I truly don't know. I mean, there are just so many different unknown variables in the air, like whether or not the league wants to have its own disciplinary process, what that means for whether the Browns want to sign him to a contract. I mean, it's just, there are so many layers to this we don't typically see. And the fact that he hasn't been signed yet obviously is one of those. So I'll be honest with you, I haven't been paying a ton of attention to it. It's one of those where when we get the final response, we get the final response and I'll react to it then. So I wish I had more insight than that, but I really don't.
Robert Mays joining us from the Athletic Football Show. Your thoughts on Dillon Gabriel, Shedeur Sanders, not necessarily this year, but what type of a career do you think those guys could have? Are they worthy of time to see if they can be a quarterback of the future here?
I think it's two different sort of timelines, right? I mean, I think in a lot of ways, if you look at just the way Shedeur's built, some of the throws he's made in the preseason, some of the throws that people have seen at training camp, you know, he's probably a more talented quarterback than Dillon Gabriel is. And that's why coming into the pre-draft process, even if he was never a first-round pick, he was always going to be a day-two pick. And I'm not sure everyone necessarily, or most people thought he had the talent of a day-two pick, I mean to say. I don't think most people saw Dillon Gabriel that way necessarily. I mean, the fact that he went in the third round was a little bit surprising for some folks. So I always felt like with Shedeur, the flashes you saw talent-wise, if there were other kind of quieter elements to his game, the procedural stuff, playing on time, that he could hone as he got more experience, he was always going to have a higher upside. With Gabriel, I think it's probably you're shooting for what a good career backup looks like. The problem is, I think that Dylan is further along, and so the timeline of like who's ready to play this year might not necessarily reflect who's going to have the higher ceiling moving forward. And I think that's something the Browns are probably having to work through right now, and they're probably going to have to work through as we get a little bit deeper into this season.
Is everybody chasing the Ravens in the AFC North?
I think so, yes.
Yeah,
I think that the Ravens last year, you know, if you look at any sort of advanced numbers that you want to look at, the eye test, I still feel like for most of last season, they were probably the best team in the NFL. Like, obviously, you're going to have blips every once in a while. The Eagles played them really well. But, you know, when you have the most efficient offense in football, one of the most explosive offenses in football, when you're blowing out good teams, I mean, when you do what they did to the Broncos, to the Texans, they had a ceiling that I don't think any of the teams in the NFL had really until the Eagles got going late in the year. And they bring back most of the component parts of that team, especially on offense. And so right now, I think they're probably the best team going into it, let alone in the AFC North, I think in the entire NFL.
Robert, is there enough time for Gabriel or Sanders to show the Browns that they don't need to draft a quarterback next year? I find that a preposterous idea, since they're sitting there with two picks in a draft where a lot of folks think five quarterbacks, six quarterbacks, maybe even could go in the first round.
I think that bar is going to be really hard to clear.
Me too.
I just think if you're going to be going into next year's draft with potentially a top five pick of your own, plus a pick that may land in the top half of the first round from Jacksonville. And when we were talking about the Browns season-long outlook, I think the line I kept going back to was, with your pick, the Jags pick, or both picks, you are very, very likely going to be in a position to draft a quarterback next year. And if that's the case, you're picking from a different sort of bucket when it comes to the level of prospect that you would have been this year. It's just a different situation. And so passing up on that sort of quarterback option when you don't have an established one is really difficult. And I just don't think either of those guys are going to assert themselves in such a way that is going to push the Browns off of taking a guy if they believe one is there to be taken.
In a way too early question to ask, was there a quarterback that jumped off the page to you this weekend in college?
I watched not a second of college football this weekend, so I am very much the wrong person to
ask. That's
okay.
It was worth asking. I thought it was worth asking.
I'd love to fill you in and tell you who they're going to draft, but we don't know yet. But by golly, we're going to be following it, Robert. Why? Because this is Cleveland.
Listen, switching over your point of focus from the NFL team to whoever the top quarterbacks in the draft are is an annual tradition where yes. I'm from as well. So I can tell you that I'm very, very familiar with that.
Yeah, but you have one now in Caleb Williams.
We'll see.
Maybe you have one. If you're the Browns, can a good defensive line, and I'm hoping that they're good, and I'm hoping they maybe become great, is that enough to propel you, forgive me, to mediocrity, 9-8, 8-9 off a three-win season?
I don't think that's enough on its own. I also think that, especially when you look at the way the Browns play, it has to go in tandem with a defense that's playing really good man coverage on the back end. And that's what they were in 2023. And I don't need them to be the 2023 defense, but I think part of the reason that they fell off a little bit last year is that you just didn't get quite the same level of play from the guys in the secondary. And obviously it's going to be harder to get there without Emerson, because now you get worse at two positions, moving Newsom back outside. But I still feel like in order for them to be that sort of defense that can make them like a fringe 500 team, it can't just be the front. You also need Denzel Ward, Newsom, the safeties to really click into something, at least bumping up against what they were 2 years ago.
All right. Answer this question as we say goodbye after this question. So Kevin Stefanski needs what to make sure that he's here next year if he wants to be?
I think it's proof that this is a good situation for a young quarterback, because if you look at what they were on offense over the last couple of years, they were lost. They were just totally lost. Part of it was the play they were getting from the quarterback, but part of it was also them doing everything they could structurally to get the most out of the quarterback. How spread out the offense was, how RPO heavy the offense was. It just strayed so far away from the bones of who Kevin Stefanski has been as an offensive coach. And I think in order for you to feel really good about this group moving forward with both him and Andrew Berry, I think two things need to happen. This draft needs to be one of those drafts where we're coming out of this and saying, we got four starters that we feel good about from this group, and then we'll see what happens with Judkins. That's the front office part of it. And then on the coaching side part of it, with Kevin, Mike Bloomgren being there as the offensive line coach now, Tommy Rees being the OC, can we bring this back to a place where, oh man, how are they doing this with the offensive personnel that they have? We weren't doing that for the last couple of years. This was the worst offense in football. And so I feel like Kevin Stefanski is showing us again that this is a hospitable environment for any quarterback you drop in there, whether it be a top five pick next year, Shedeur Sanders, Dillon Gabriel, whoever. This is that type of place. I think that's what needs to happen for us to feel good about this group moving forward.
Robert, always a pleasure.
Thanks, man.
The Athletic Football Show, Robert's podcast. Go listen to it. Thank you, buddy. Robert joining us on the Fan Hotline.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
You must remember this as the podcast dedicated to stories from the secret and forgotten histories of 20th century Hollywood. Stories of sex, murder, institutional racism, bad men, sad women, fascist gossip columnists, and much more. Our new season is called The Old Man is Still Alive, and it's about directors like Alfred Hitchcock and John Ford who got started in the silent era, but were still making movies in the psychedelic 60s. Follow and listen to You Must Remember This on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's welcome in John Greco. He joins us every week. John Greco, former Browns guard, current Browns analyst. He joins us on the Fan Hotline. John, how the hell are you this morning?
Here I am. Here I am. Good morning, Ken. How are you guys?
Here he is once again. Yes, John Greco. John, did you watch the quarterbacks with a specific reason in mind over the weekend, the way that Jimmy Haslam might have been when he was at the games?
No, I did not. It's hard for me to even think about next year's quarterbacks when we, you know, invested so much time and energy into this year's quarterback room only for, you know, the switcheroo to be made with Kenny Pickett. I'm trying to have nearsightedness when it comes to this team, and I'm not quite yet ready to mail it in and start talking about 2026 draft. But, it was nice to see some of those. I mean, let's be honest, there's kind of four names that we're looking at, four quarterbacks that we're going to be keeping an eye on this year. And, one of them that played against the I almost said the Browns, against the Buckeyes, you know, had a lackluster start. And we'll see, you know, why that may have been. Could have been Matt Patricia's new defense. Could have been just, a little bit shaky boots in week one in a hostile environment. You know, something tells me that young man's going to look a lot different a month from now than he did Saturday down here in Columbus. But, you know, Beck, so some of the other players, the LSU kid, I thought they shined and looked good. So, obviously, that's going to be a topic of conversation throughout the year, and a lot of eyes are going to be on them, given the Browns do have some serious ammo going into next year's draft.
All right, John, so when you think about the upcoming season, it seems like every year we have, you know, hopes for a playoff run, or, you know, when you're starting like a first-year quarterback, then you're like, all right, expectations are at a different spot. But with this team, you're starting a 40-year-old quarterback. You've got guys, holdovers from previous playoff teams, but yet nobody seems to think you're going to be very good. So what is this season all about?
Yeah, it's funny that we're finally here, and that is becoming a reality. You know, the narrative was, you know, which one of these four quarterbacks in the room is going to be the starter. And then we were so concerned about who was going to be the number two that it was like, you know, week one seemed light years away. Well, here we are, and it's now a reality. And going to this into this season, you know, I honestly don't know what I think is going to happen. And, you know, Joe Flacco and this team, you know, defensively and the guys that they've assembled around Joe offensively, they might surprise everybody and come out to a hot start. I know the schedule is difficult and it'll be an uphill battle, but we don't know what it's going to look like. There might be some young guys that shine, that surprise everyone, and they could be competitive. You know, especially Cincinnati, we'll look at, you know, what's directly ahead of us. They've had a sluggish start in September in recent years. And I think the guys in the locker room see the writing on the wall and say, look, I don't know if anybody is really giving us a chance this year or thinks we're going to be very good. And, you know, when you're in the first couple days of September, those conversations still matter and they can make a difference. And you know, before we, I don't want to say and that, you know, derailing this season is going to happen on purpose. You know, we'll get to that conversation later in the year if we have to. But I think right now, everybody in that building, everybody that's getting ready to suit up on Sunday, thinks they're going to win and thinks that they can, you know, come out and start hot and make it competitive here in the first month of the season. And then the narrative changes. And then you're looking at the, you know, next year, the next draft and adding pieces to the puzzle. You know, a lot of these young rookies have shined in limited opportunities in the preseason. So I'm curious to see what they're going to do. But yeah, I want to see them come out and you have Joe Flacco, who's steady, who has leadership, who is not afraid to throw the ball downfield. So I hope they give him a chance to do that. And let's see where let's see what happens. So I'm just kind of looking right in front of me what's happening now and saying it's hard for me to even think about past this week. And maybe that I'm naive in thinking that, but as a player, I was like, who cares? Let's just lock out the noise, limit distractions. Let's go try to beat Cincinnati and start 1-0 and 1-0 in our division.
John Greco joining us here on the Fan Hotline. What do you think that Joe Burrow might struggle with that we could take advantage of?
Well, their offensive line, let's be honest, isn't very good. I don't think they've improved. I think that has been an area of concern for them in recent years. And, you know, when you have a guy like Joe Burrow that's at the top of his game, and when he gets time, he's able to find his weapons and really, really be a disruptor. For them not to really address that, and they've tried. It's not like they're just like, oh, let's throw anybody out there. But that's kind of what it looks like. And they've missed on some picks and some free agent acquisitions. But, you know, rattling him and getting around his legs and having orange helmets flash in his field of vision, that is going to disrupt him. And I think that this team, this Browns defense, is fully capable of doing that. I'm curious to see what they have dialed up. You know, you have a couple young guys in there. So are they going to create pressures? Or are they going to sit back in coverage? I don't know what the plan defensively will be, but I think getting him off his rhythm, and if you start hitting him early and send a message early, if Myles Garrett on the first third down or the first play, pass rush opportunity of the game, if he's flashing by Joe Burrow and hitting him, I think it could be a long day for Burrow and the Bengals. So that's really it. You have to kind of try to disguise things, and he's a young player. He's very smart. He's very bright. He knows defenses. You're not necessarily going to fool him and throw something at him that he's never seen before. But I think just keeping him off his rhythm to where he looks kind of like he's hopping around in the backfield and maybe pumping the ball a little bit before he delivers. If we can get him off of his rhythm and hit him early and often, I think that's how you get him out of his game. Because when he just sits back there with the confidence that, hey, no one's coming near me, no one's touching me, or I don't really care, I'm just going to deliver to these guys, T. Higgins, Jamar Chase, that's when that guy becomes dangerous. When he has that confidence and that swagger about him that we all see, that's when he becomes dangerous. So to get him off that, you got to hit him early and often, try to disguise some of the defenses, show him different looks, and really the crowd's got to be into it. And if the crowd's into it and they're hitting him early, I think we'll be okay.
John Greco with us on the hotline. We've heard so much from people that have been at camp every day, and people have talked to Kevin Stefanski. There's going to be a bunch of two tight end stuff. So you're going to see a lot of heavy packages. What does that mean for, you know, this offense, what their identity is going to be, and what does it mean for the running game?
Yeah, you know, Anthony, that tells me that, you know, probably not trying to spread it out much, obviously, when you'll have two attached tight ends. But that there's a couple parts to this answer. Those tight ends have to be terrific in the run game and in blocking if they expect the run game to look anywhere decent. Because when you attach tight ends, you know, they're in combination with the tackles, or they're one-on-one on the backside and trying to cut off, you know, a defensive end or an outside linebacker. So those guys have to be buttoned up and dialed in their technique and assignment. But what that also tells me is that they're trying to, you know, condense the box on the other side of the line of scrimmage defensively for Cincinnati, bring more guys in the box, and then you get a hat on the hat, and that's how they create those deep shots with the play action. So hopefully early they're able to get some runs popped open and pick up 4, 5, 6, and then you bring a safety down, you cheat him in, and then that's where you hit some maybe delayed play actions to these tight ends, David Njoku, Harold Fannin. And I want to see what they can do over the top. So if they can really do max protect and help some of these guys in protection and take deep shots and let Flacco, you know, really, really test the field and stretch the field vertically, like I said in the opening comments, I think that's how you'll see the Browns get big chunk plays, get down in the red zone. And I think you're definitely going to see these tight ends featured in the red zone. And that's been kind of a struggle for the Browns offense lately. When I say lately, these past couple seasons, it's about, you know, moving the ball between the red zones hasn't really been a huge issue. Now, I know sometimes they haven't, and they've done three and outs and have stalled a little bit and have had turnovers. But once they get down in the red zone, especially in the tight red zone, they just haven't been able to punch it in for six. So I want to see those tight ends, you know, get them on the line of scrimmage, have them block, have them delay release, have some play actions, and have Joe Flacco find them in the end zone, because that's going to be what makes or breaks this offense this year. Are they kicking field goals, and then are we worried about, my God, is this guy making, is this guy missing it, or are they converting for touchdowns? And I think that's going to be a big storyline. But having those guys block, having those guys sell blocks and then release and pass play actions, that's going to be big, and that's what I'm going to be watching here Sunday.
Well, you talked about having those very, very noisy boxes with a lot more defenders coming up. And obviously, when we had Nick Chubb and in his prime, that didn't seem to bother him all that much. What type of running back is, you know, really going to be okay with having that many bodies around them and still able to get production?
Yeah, you know, I think these running backs that we have in the, you know, and obviously one of them's young, and we don't know about Junkins. You know, we'll see what happens this week if they end up getting him signed and if they can get him up to speed, but that's a different conversation. But look, Jerome Ford's been there. He's been around this tree before. He's been in the room with Nick Chubb, and I can guarantee you when, you know, the coaches put up a highlight tape and you can see everybody working in unison, the quarterback selling the handoff, stretching it, finishing his you know, release and rollout. When you see the tight ends, the tackles, the guards, the centers working in unison, getting a hat on the hat, getting the second level. And then at the end of the day, guys, you got to make one man miss. There's always going to be an unblocked guy, a safety or a nickel or someone in the secondary. So can Jerome Ford do that? Can Dylan Sampson do that? We'll see. I think Jerome Ford has shown the ability that he can do that and make those big home run hits. But it's about getting a hat on the hat up front early, and they're definitely going to test that early with the outside zone stretch. So, you know, condensed boxes, I'm okay with that, because as long as you get a hat on the hat and get your defender moving, laterally, but you're also displacing him off the line of scrimmage, then they'll have success. And then it's just about, you know, the running back having the vision, having some of the attributes that got them to this situation in the NFL. You know, they're getting the ball, they're using their eyes, they're hitting their targets, they're hitting the gap where they're supposed to, you know, hit by the design of the run. But also this zone scheme, a lot of these plays are like quote unquote design cutbacks, where it's not really like a counter where they're cutting back. They're just naturally curving their target and cutting back off the backside combination blocks, which these Browns guards and tackles are so good at. So I'm excited to see what these guys have to do. And I think you're going to see some big chunk runs early. And then that's when the play action starts creeping in. And you have these same formations where it looks like, hey, run, run, run. Oh, all of a sudden, Joe Flacco still has that ball, and we're seeing somebody scream down the sidelines catching a big one.
Are you still 7-8 wins?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I am. I think that's realistic. And, you know, my God, a lot of people were really angry when I said that. And then, you know, the three of us talked on your show how some people thought that that was an undersell, which, hey, great. But, yeah, I think it's going to be where they're going to be in a lot. They're going to find themselves in a lot of close games. And then we'll be able to dissect under a microscope what happened in those games. You know, was it a turnover? Was it a missed kick? Was it a special teams thing? There's going to be so many small things that determine one way or another in these games. But I think they're capable of winning 7, 8, 9 games. I'll say 9 games. Because I think this, you know, in their division, they've shown that. I know there's some terrific teams in their division and terrific individual players, but anybody can beat anybody in the division. And do they have a tough, you know, road schedule, tough schedules, especially early? Yes. But anything can happen in the NFL. And I think they have the defense for it when they're healthy. And I think they have the leadership at quarterback with Joe Flacco. If they can keep them upright, hopefully they have enough weapons that where he can distribute it and they can score some points.
John Greco, find him on Twitter at John_Greco77. John, thank you very much for the time. Hopefully we're talking to you after we're 1-0 on next Tuesday.
I can't wait to watch. You guys have a great week.
You too. John Greco joining us on the Fan Hotline.
He's back! He's back and better than ever. Nick Costos. Nick, great to have you back. Jeff Phelps, Dan Menigan. How are you, buddy?
What's going on, guys? Great to be back with you. Great to be on with the great sports fans in Cleveland. Happy football season to everybody.
We are pumped. We are ready to go. We can't wait. Tonight, let's just start with game number one. Dallas at Philadelphia. What's your gut telling you?
So the Eagles guys are sitting right now at BetMGM 8.5-point favorite, like 8 or 8.5, depending on where you're looking. The total's 47.5, and this number got bet out after the Cowboys last week obviously traded Micah Parsons to the Green Bay Packers. So betting interest in the Philadelphia Eagles. Now we have seen at 8.5 interest in Dallas in the betting market. So Dallas is the popular side at this number right now, not necessarily to win the game, but to at least keep the game close and cover the spread. And the more I've thought about this game and spent a lot of time this morning thinking about it and the on-field handicap, I'm actually going to lay the points with the Philadelphia Eagles tonight. And the reason why is, I think if you wanted to make a strong case for Dallas, it would be that the Cowboys can score enough, right, with the Eagles to stay in this game, maybe force a couple turnovers, keep the game close, and maybe potentially win it at the end, or at least score enough points to cover a big number. And Dallas's passing attack, for what it's worth, I do think has the chance to be awesome this year. I just don't know about this matchup against this defense. You know, CeeDee Lamb is probably going to see time in the slot tonight. Dallas acquired George Pickens this offseason from Pittsburgh. The problem for CeeDee Lamb is he's probably going to go up against Cooper DeJean, who was awesome last year as a rookie. And the problem for George Pickens is that he's probably going to see Quinyon Mitchell, another stud rookie from last year, a boundary cornerback for Philadelphia. Dallas is not going to be able to run. They've got Curtin Jerkin and Jabroni running backs against this Eagles front. I don't know how Dallas is going to score a ton of points in this game, or at least score enough points to keep up. And on the flip side, Jerry Jones can say whatever he wants, guys, about Dallas's run defense improving with Kenny Clark in and Micah Parsons out. It's ridiculous. Parsons was one of the best run-defending edge rushers in the National Football League. There's no case to be made that Dallas's offense is better, losing maybe alongside Myles Garrett, the best pass rusher in the league, in Micah Parsons. I think the Eagles are going to lay it on them tonight. I do like the over in the game because I think Philly's going to score a ton. Dallas can do its part. So Eagles and the over would be my plays for tonight.
Nick Costos joining us. And Nick, back
for another season with us as our Odyssey Sports Betting Insider, and we absolutely love having him here. Our Cleveland Browns are a work in progress, Nick. How's that?
What? I think that is a really nice way to put it, that they are a work in progress this season.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm a little nervous about the Browns for next season also. Just I don't know financially how this is all going to go, and they need to hope that Jacksonville is bad, obviously, this year, since they have the Jaguars' first-round pick when they moved down from 2 to 5 and then selected Mason Graham. So I don't think the expectations should be that the Browns are going to be good this year. Like, the roster is not great, and obviously, like, the quarterbacks aren't great. And I don't think you get a full season of lightning in a bottle like they did a couple years ago when Flacco won Comeback Player of the Year, obviously. And I would guess Flacco doesn't starts maybe 5 or 6 games this year, and then you get like the poo-poo platter, emphasis on poo-poo, right, of Dylan Gabriel and Shedeur Sanders. And, you know, maybe the Browns can keep it close. They could even steal this game. They play really well against Cincinnati. The Bengals obviously start slow, and that's been a big talking point this offseason. But even just think about, even if you think Cleveland can be competitive in games and Stefanski's a good coach and the defense does have to, I actually like some of the young defensive players on the Browns. Schweisinger, the linebacker. I like Mason Graham. This first 6 games is absolutely nightmarish for Cleveland, right? So, home Bengals, 5.5-point home dog right now. At the Ravens in week 2. Home Packers, at the Lions. Home Vikings, at the Steelers. I think they're probably going to start 0-6. And I think the whole thing for Cleveland is, like, maybe they want to be bad and bet on Jacksonville not being great. And then you have more ammo to get your quarterback next year. I think it's extremely likely the quarterback of the future, guys, is not currently on the roster. So I think if you're a Browns fan, what you really want to happen is for some of these young players to take a step, right, and show that they can be franchise cornerstones, because they lost so many draft picks in the Watson trade that this roster really needs to be replenished with young talent. So the young guys really have to play well this year. And if that happens, even if the record's bad, I actually think that's progress for the Cleveland Browns, provided they can get their quarterback of the future in next year's draft.
Nick, we talked about that yesterday, because I think it's a strange predicament that they are in, and especially that the Browns fans are in, because you want to root for your team. On the other hand, next year's draft is supposed to be quarterback loaded. There are big names in it already. You would appear that you're going to get one, and you have 2 first-round picks to do it. So you'd want that pick, your pick, to be as high as possible, yet you want to win games this year. What's a Browns fan to do this year?
I think you probably, and look, I'm never going to tell a fan base to root for your team to lose, especially one that hasn't seen a ton of success. And I don't mean that to be a jerk, just like the Browns have never won a Super Bowl. They've never been to a Super Bowl. Obviously, since they re-entered the league in 98, they really haven't had any prolonged periods of being good. So obviously, like, you want your team to win, but I don't think they're going to. So I think what you need to root for instead, and again, just to reiterate what I said, you want these young players to really step up. Like, it would be great for the Browns. I'll throw some names out. Like, can Cedric Tillman show that he's a good player this year, someone you can depend on? Like, I know people, like, don't like Isaiah Bond, but, like, can Isaiah Bond show you something? Can Harold Fannin show you something? I actually think he'll have a nice rookie year. Can Schweisinger be really good? Can Mason Graham be really good? Like, you need these players to be good, because you lost so many, like, premium picks in the Watson deal, obviously. So if you get through this year, and you can confidently say, the Browns have several young building blocks on both sides of the ball, I think then you can feel decent about things moving forward, provided, obviously, they can get their quarterback. Because, look, I mean, maybe I'm wrong about Dylan Gabriel and Shedeur Sanders. I think they're both probably NFL backups. Joe Flacco's in his 40s. Like, the quarterback of the future is not on this roster. So, for me, progress for the Browns, if these young players are good, then you can feel decent heading into next year. But, man, like, if Schweisinger's bad, if Graham's bad, if Tillman's bad, if Fannin's bad, I think they're probably going to be bad again next year.
Audio Sports Betting Insider Nick Kostos joining us right now. Nick, are you a Bengals believer, or are you a Bengals skeptic?
Oh, I'm a big-time Bengals skeptic. Big time. The Bengals defense last year was, like, legendarily bad. And they replaced the defensive coordinator. Lou Anarumo is now the DC of the Colts. Al Golden, like, the former college football head coach, he was Notre Dame's DC last year, he comes in, and I look at this defense, and I don't know if it's going to be a lot better than it was last year, if better at all. You know, Trey Hendrickson's back. He had 17 and a half sacks last year. Like, is he going to do that again? Maybe, but if, you know, maybe not. Shamar Stewart, who was the first round pass rusher, is extremely raw. Seems to be like a real boom bust prospect. Like, and there, some of their young draft picks haven't panned out in the same way you could say for Cleveland. Like, Miles Murphy is a recent second round pick, defensive end. He hasn't done anything. So I look at this defense and I think they're going to give up a ton of points this season. And if you watch them in the preseason, and I know it's preseason, but their first team defense was playing against second stringers for the Eagles, against the Commanders, and we're getting absolutely torched. Now, the offense is going to be awesome, right? Like it was last year. Burrow's an MVP caliber quarterback. Chase is great. Higgins is great. I do think the offensive line can be better this year, but I don't know how you can pick Cincinnati to do anything of consequence if the defense is projected to be so bad. I think they will miss the playoffs this year. I would never bet Joe Burrow to win MVP. Not that he isn't an MVP caliber player, but think about the number of games that you need your team to win in order to win MVP. Are the Bengals ever going 13-4 with this defense? I think it's extremely unlikely. So I could be wrong, and maybe the defense is average and the Bengals will win 12 games if that's the case, but I'm very skeptical that that will happen. I have the Bengals on the outside of the playoffs.
Nick, correct me if I'm wrong on this, and Nick Costos joining us, our Odyssey Sports Betting Insider. I'm assuming you think Baltimore in the AFC North, but tell me what we should think of the Pittsburgh Steelers with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback.
I like the Steelers a lot. I actually think, guys, that the betting market has Pittsburgh like pretty underpriced here compared to what I see as like a very talented roster. Talent on all three levels of the defense, especially once the rookie first-round defensive tackle Derek Harmon is back from injury, right? Alongside Cam Hayward and Keanu Benton and T.J. Watt and Alex Highsmith. I like the linebackers. I really like second-year linebacker Peyton Wilson. You add Jalen Ramsey and Darius Slay to a secondary that already has Porter, right? I really, really like this defense. I think it could be top five this season for the Steelers. And on offense, obviously, there aren't a lot of sexy skill position players. It's really just DK Metcalf in the pass-catching group. But we know Arthur Smith and what he likes to do as an offensive coordinator. And I think you're going to see the Steelers get a little wacky this year, guys, in terms of how they run their offensive formations and personnel. Where I wouldn't be shocked if you saw the Steelers run a good amount of three tight end sets this season with Pat Freiermuth, 6'7" Darnell Washington, who might be the best offensive lineman on the team, and he's a tight end. Obviously, they trade for Jonnu Smith also. They have Hayward's brother also. They've got four tight ends that they can roll out there. So I think you're going to see this offense get a little funky to make up for the lack of wide receivers that they have. And I like Jaylen Warren and the rookie running back Caleb Johnson. And I'm still an Aaron Rodgers guy, even though I think a lot of people aren't. I think he can get the job done this year. Not going to be asked to throw the ball 40 times a game. I think Pittsburgh's going to win 10 games, and I think the Steelers guys will make the playoffs this year out of the AFC North.
Wow. All right, Nick, pleasure. Looking forward to a fun-filled football season, having you with us every Thursday.
You guys got it. Enjoy the games this weekend. Also, my Ohio State Buckeyes, I got them to win the Natty again this year. Looked great last week. Let's keep it rolling. Wishing everybody minimal sweats, winning bets. The absolute very best of luck.
It's today we find out about Quinshon Judkins.
That'd be nice.
Let's find out with Mary Kay Cammett. She joins us right now, the Cleveland from the fan hotline on the Cleveland from Cleveland.com, the Cleveland Plain Dealer. But hello, Mary Kay.
Hey guys, how you doing?
We gonna find out about Quinshon Judkins today.
I don't know if it's today, tomorrow, next week, but I did sort of get the sense that there was some hope that there would be movement sometime this week with the season starting. I don't know what the holdup is. I think there are a lot of moving parts at play here when you talk about the team, the agent, the player, the league, the NFLPA. So there are a lot of things probably going on behind the scenes that we don't really know about, and sometimes these things take time.
Okay, do you think it's just a matter of we're still talking guaranteed money, or do you think we're still trying to figure out from a legal perspective what's happening, even though, you know, charges were not ultimately filed, formal charges?
I don't think it's necessarily a legal perspective, but the NFL has still been investigating his case under their personal conduct policy. So I think it's more so that than anything, if it has anything to do with the dropped domestic battery charge. It's just the league trying to determine if he should be disciplined or suspended or whatever the case may be. And the last I had heard probably about a week ago is that they were still reviewing the case. So I think it's kind of all tied in together.
Okay, well, that's, I mean, that doesn't make me feel any better. But I mean, you're just doing your job here. Okay, I can't yell at you for not making me feel any better. So should I consider it a wash, or what is this season going to be then?
Well, remember last year, Mike Hall Jr., even though he only pleaded guilty to disorderly conduct and not a domestic violence charge, the NFL still suspended him for 5 games. So I think you have to kind of look at it in that context. I don't know if they're going to suspend Quinshon. They're probably still conducting their investigation or wrapping it up. But I wouldn't be surprised if they do. I actually wouldn't be surprised if they don't. I've heard it both ways. I don't know what the outcome of that is going to be, but I just have to believe that the holdup has something to do with how it all works together.
All right, Mary Kay, obviously going into the season, it's now time to talk about the Cincinnati Bengals. And I think there is some optimism, even though the show hasn't necessarily sounded like it for the season, there is some optimism about this game because of what Myles Garrett has been able to do to that offensive line of the Bengals. But everything we are hearing from Cincinnati is they're treating this like the Super Bowl. So given that, will that make things tougher for the Browns?
I think it's going to be a really, really good battle. I think it's going to be a close game, and I think it's a game of matchups. So, of course, when you look at this football game, yes, you are looking at Myles Garrett against their offensive line and Myles Garrett and what he can do to Joe Burrow and what the game plan is for those guys. I think on both sides of the ball, there are some really, really intriguing matchups, and I think that the NFL world might just be a little bit surprised about what they see out of the Cleveland Browns. To turn on any site, you would think that the Cleveland Browns were the worst team in the history of football. I mean, 31st in almost every power ranking that I see. I asked Denzel about that yesterday. 31st for a football team that has arguably the best pass rusher in the NFL, one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL, now the number 5 pick, who will be wreaking havoc inside there in Mason Graham. You've got a Pro Bowler at quarterback for right now. You've got Pro Bowlers at tight end, wide receiver in Jerry Jeudy, your guards, your tackle, Jack Conklin. So I think there is more talent on this football team than people remember that there is because of what happened last season at 3-14. Now, I think it all depends on the quarterback play. If they get good quarterback play, then I think that they can win some games this season. If they're throwing interceptions and fumbling the ball away, then they're not going to win games. It comes down, in my mind, to the quarterback.
I kind of, and this could be taken, you know, two in the hand, one, you know, whatever, half dozen the other. When it comes to Joe Flacco, like we've been asking about the leash on Joe Flacco. How many games does he get? How many games does he get? I think it's more on how soon you can get the pups ready to go. Like if Dylan Gabriel looks like he's ready to go by week 4, maybe they squeeze the trigger on Dylan Gabriel. I think it's more on the rookies than it would be on Joe.
I think it's a combination of those things, because if Joe is going out there and he's hitting those explosive plays and he's not throwing interceptions and he's not getting sacked and he's not fumbling and he just so happens to win some football games, then I don't think that you can yank him out of there. I think you have to give this football team every possible chance to win. You can't sell losing to your fans. You can't sell it to your players. You have to be giving this football team every chance to win. And if he is demonstrating that he can do that, then you can't touch him. You've got to let him roll. But I do think that they love Dylan Gabriel, and I think they want to see him at some point this season. And it's really, I think, in my mind, up to Joe to keep him out of there and to say, no, this is mine. You go wait over there for a while.
One of the demoralizing things last year was the defensive performance. How do I know I can trust them again?
Well, you know, there are a lot of unknowns. I think the defensive line looks good. I think Carson is bringing something really intriguing and interesting to the table at linebacker. And, of course, we know exactly what Denzel Ward is all about. After that, I think there are some unknowns. This is Greg Newsom's opportunity to step back up into the starting role and prove that he deserves to be an outside corner. He got that job taken away from him last year. Now he's back in that role, And he has a chance beginning this week to show that not only can he play well this season, but that he deserves an extension here. So we'll have to see how that goes. And, you know, they're into their depth there in the secondary. So that's, I think, where they're going to have to really prove themselves. And what this defense needs to do this year, they need to make impact plays. Each one of those players needs to step up and elevate their game to the point where, once again, and Jim Schwartz has even said this, if you haven't made the Pro Bowl, make the Pro Bowl this year. And he set the bar very, very high for Miles. Okay, Miles, we've already seen you get NFL Defensive Player of the Year. Why not NFL MVP right now? So that's what these players are going to have to do. They're going to have to play above even their capabilities and show everyone what they've got.
So Denzel, you know, we think we're going to see him matched up with Ja'Marr Chase, but he'll always have somebody to very closely monitor. But with the loss of Emerson now, this is one of those teams where you could see that, oh boy, you need some other guys to step up in a big way. And some of those guys look like they struggled throughout camp and preseason. So what do you make of that situation going up against the Bengals this week?
Oh my gosh. It's going to be really incredible this week to see what happens with those kind of matchups. And, you know, I really think that the game, once again, is going to come down to how Myles Garrett can get to Joe Burrow. And I think the game is going to be won or lost there in the trenches, probably on both sides, because if you look to the other side of the ball, the Browns have got to protect Joe Flacco. Trey Hendrickson is also going to be playing with his hair on fire. And you've got DeJuan Jones over there at left tackle. And he has to be able to protect Joe Flacco in order for Joe to be able to run his game and hit those explosives downfield to Jerry Jeudy, now to Isaiah Bond, and some of those guys. So I think the pass rush is going to be a huge, huge element in this football game. And you know, one of these guys is going to come out with, or maybe both of these guys are going to come out with multiple sacks, but I think that the game could turn there.
What's Tommy Rees' role now within the offense now that Kevin Stefanski has taken back over play calling? Has it gone back to like Alex Van Pelt?
Well, it's kind of like that, unless Kevin decides to turn the play calling over to Tommy Rees. And we don't know for sure yet if he's decided to do that or not. I think he'll probably start out at least calling the plays himself, because this is a brand new offense, and sometimes you want to see what it looks like out on the grass before you put it in the hands of someone else and put that responsibility on someone else. But Tommy, by all accounts, is a brilliant offensive mind. And if it makes sense for Kevin to turn it over to him, then I think he'll do that at some point.
Well, Kevin could actually turn over play calling.
Well, he turned it over to Ken last year, so I don't think that it's out of the realm of possibility. We haven't heard anything about that yet. But I do think that at some point, Tommy possesses the ability to do that very, very well. And Kevin, this is, again, not an ego thing for Kevin. If he thinks that's the right thing to do, then he'll go ahead and do it.
How close is Mike Hall to getting back?
I think a couple weeks. I don't know if he'll be ready for the Ravens game next week. I think he's ramping up. I would put it more at week three, maybe week four. I would be surprised if he plays next week, but you know, I can't completely rule him out at this point, but I would say more like three or four.
All right, Mary Kay, what did you think of seeing not only Jimmy Haslam, not only Andrew Berry, but also furthermore, Kevin Stefanski at that Ohio State game over the weekend, plus you saw Jimmy take off the private jet and go to another high-profile college football game.
Well, that's what it's going to be like this whole entire college football season. And I was also out at the Colorado showcase when Shador and Travis were out there, and Jimmy was out there too. So he's going to be using that private jet and getting these guys all around to these football games. He will go to them. He will take an active role in helping to make sure that they're leaving no stone unturned in their quest to find the best quarterback for themselves next year. And I think that's a lot of what this season is about. It's a fact-finding mission. I don't think that they feel convinced that they have their guy on this roster. They're hopeful that maybe they do. But I think this this season is going to be 1 foot in the NFL and another foot in college football, and you'll see those guys all over the place.
Do we know who specifically was running scout team this week? Was it Shador? Was it Zappe?
I'm sure that Shador ran some of it, but no, I don't know for sure. We're kicked out of there after individuals, so we don't get to see that much. But I will say this, in regular practice that we do get to see, those reps are very, very hard to come by for Shador and Bailey. So they have to find creative and alternative ways to get those reps. There will still be split off situations where they're getting them. There will be after practice reps that happen. But when you're installing the game plan, it's really difficult for those young quarterbacks to get reps. And it's been that way in practice this week.
Well, I only ask because, you know, Joe Burrow, who would more closely resemble Joe Burrow at all? I know it's tough because he's a top, you know, four quarterback probably in the NFL, but stands to reason, you'd probably have Zappe be the guy on scout team rather than Shador just to get your defense ready, right?
Well, I mean, it's a good point. I don't know if they're doing that or not, because I do remember when we talked to Shador about his situation, he was very, 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 very excited to go against the first team defense and looking forward to that. So I don't know. Maybe they're dividing it up. You know, we'll find out more as the week goes along, and maybe they'll let us know. But it would make some sense to have Bailey doing some of that, but I'm sure Shador is doing some of it as well.
What has Joel Bitonio told you how he's feeling going into what we all assume is his last NFL season?
Well, Joel doesn't really like to talk too much in absolutes about, you know, about that sort of thing. I think he still kind of tries to take it one season at a time and not look too far ahead, even though I think we all believe that this probably is his last season based on the fact that he really seriously pondered retiring before this season. But you never really know. It depends on what happens the season before. It depends on how your body is feeling. And so, you know, you can never really rule it out. But I do think that, you know, this is probably the swan song for Joel, and he won't want any fanfare about that. He's just going to want to do what he's always done, and that is to go out and do his job. And he's been a joy and a pleasure to cover, and you just cannot have enough guys on a football team like Joel Bitonio.
Mary Kay, thank you so much for the time, and of course, we'll talk to you again next Thursday.
Sounds good. Take care.
Mary Kay Cabot on the fan hotline, joining us, getting you ready for the Browns and Bengals coming up on Sunday. Still don't know about Quinshon Judkins. Should we give up asking, or?
I did. It wasn't just Mary Kay. I talked to some other people that thought this was going to happen this week, so I wonder what was the snag. I wonder, what was there a last-minute ask from Judkins' side, or was it on the Browns' side? Are the Browns playing hardball over this situation, which I find interesting because I see people talking about, well, for potential behavioral things. And I'm like, well, Judkins was not a big risk coming out. There was no intel that I'd been made aware of, and he was at Ohio State last year, and I would have heard something. We did not. Mike Hall, we had heard some things. This, we hadn't. So if all of a sudden the Browns are playing hardball because they've got somebody that they consider at risk, then I don't know how much of a leg the Browns have to stand on given the amount of players they have, even currently, facing legal issues.
A lot of fun, as is our next guest. He joins us every single Thursday at 4:20. The great Pete Futek of College Football News joins us. Hi, Pete. How you doing, bud?
Week one, fun. Me, fun. Find it in week two. I hope you enjoyed week one. Ain't a lot out there happening in week two this week. They kind of front-loaded it. But, hey, we'll find it somewhere.
That is fair. I don't know. I enjoy 70-0 Penn State over FIU. That can be fun for some.
There's something to it. Like, we now enter the world of, you know, sports investing in NFL stuff where every game is, you know, 24-20. Where, yeah, the 75-3 games, those are always, look, if you're one of those types and you like over-unders, this is, college football is fun in week two. But outside of that, there's a few good games. What do you care? You won the one big game you had to have.
Sorry about that.
I feel like my mission for since Saturday happened and then all throughout the weekend was to basically reward some of the teams that took on the tougher opponents but did end up in the loss section, right? So, like, I wanted to reward Notre Dame. I wanted to reward Texas, for instance. Some of the teams just for playing the hard games and seeing like they belonged, I think, mattered.
Can I take the opposite? Instead of rewarding them, morons! What are you doing? Like, why you don't have a preseason? You don't have the NFL. The NFL guys get like four times the amount of time to prep up and get ready. You don't have those warm-up games. What are you doing coming to Columbus, Ohio, and starting your season with a quarterback who's pretty much new, and even though he's going to make $1 billion and be great, you know, why? Why are you starting your season off against LSU? Why are you starting your season off against Miami? That's what week two should be for. And I think all these teams are absolutely freaking nuts to get one game. Look at Michigan, for example. They go out there, Bryce Underwood throws for like 40 more yards than any Michigan quarterback threw for last year. And they got their tune-up in before going to Oklahoma. It doesn't mean they're going to win, but it just means they might be a little bit sharper because, man, Alabama, that looked like a team that needed some live reps. You know, Arch Manning, he looked like it's not fair if he's going against Matt Patricia and that Ohio State defense that had a whole offseason to prepare, but that looked like an offense that could have used, a nice little, cupcake Central Tech A&M game just to get ready to go. So I love it. We all love it. We all love those big games, but that's what this week should really be for. Because I'm fine with it. Get those 75-2 games out of the way in week one or even week zero, because these teams obviously need them because there was no offense that was clicking in week one.
Pete, we'll lump week zero into this as well, even though there were really no great matchups there. I'll ask you, over the first 2 weeks of the college football season, who's impressed you the most?
I mean, let's go kind of deep cuts. You know, I know they haven't played anybody great, but Kansas has looked great. They get Missouri coming up next. That's a team that started to rock and roll. Like you said, it's only been really 1 week. I'm not going to jump all in on the LSU love train yet. And remember, we can't overreact because, again, these teams aren't right there. They don't have their legs yet. So, yes, we say, okay, now we're sure thing that Alabama is in trouble and Kalen DeBoer is going to get fired. Well, I don't know. They kind of walked into a buzzsaw. But I think overarching, I liked CJ Carr in Miami. I mean, again, what are you doing starting the season with Miami and Texas A&M, Notre Dame? You can choose any schedule you want. You're doing this. But CJ Carr, he actually kind of outplayed Carson Beck, even though Carson Beck looks good, got a lot of help from his receivers. But they had it. They had the puck on their stick late with a chance to pull that out. That's about as acceptable a loss as it gets, but they got to beat Texas A&M coming forward. But Notre Dame, if they didn't melt down on the lines, that would have been a good game for them. So I kind of was impressed. At least they lost the battle there, but they might not lose again for the rest of 2025.
I hear what you're saying, and I find it really interesting. Texas Ohio State drew nearly 17 million viewers, most watched week one college game on record. How do they balance out the idea that we all watched it, we all loved that it happened in week one, but what you're saying, and it was true, a lot of these games did look sloppy, and a lot of these games, like if you're smarter, you're right, Michigan taking on Oklahoma in week two makes a lot more sense than taking on someone of importance in week one, but how do you balance out the idea that some teams have to do it to keep it entertaining, to keep it, keep this whole wheel spinning, while others then get to take what is actually the smart approach?
Not only is this the smart idea, because it makes everyone more money. Play week zero. Use week zero as the national cupcake day, FBS versus FCS teams. Every FBS team gets a home game against an FCS team where they get that one tune-up in first. The FCS team gets a paycheck. You get the students are back. You get the home crowd. The TV stations are going to all televise and everyone's going to be going nuts because there's nothing else to do except watch college football. And that's it. No more FCS games the rest of the year. No more Alabama versus Mercer in mid-November or anything like that. Get them all out of the way in week zero. get your tune-up in, and then you get the 17 million people in week one when Texas visits Ohio State, because you just get a better product. Because, yeah, this was entertaining, and it was actually pretty good. But, again, these teams are not anywhere near as good as they're going to be 3 weeks from now. I'm not saying Ohio State loses that game to Texas, but Arch Manning's good. I mean, everyone's thunder dunking on him right now. He's really good, and he's going to show it off over the next couple of games. But now they're playing like three straight, you know, pickup games. They have nothing happening for the next few weeks. And then look at a team like Penn State. They're not exactly extending themselves with the offseason. They have three light scrimmages, and then they really kind of start. So there's ways to do this, and there's ways to make everyone happy. And I think week zero, you start out with one game and go from there.
Pete Fuchak, College Football News on the Fan Hotline here. Julian Sayin was efficient in his Ohio State debut against a great Texas defense. Bryce Underwood, as you've mentioned, was very strong in his Michigan debut. I will ask you, if you could only buy stock in one of those quarterbacks for their future in college football, are you choosing Bryce Underwood at Michigan or Julian Sayin at Ohio State?
Between those two, I think Underwood seems like he's got the more talent and upside, but Sayin's going to do more. I mean, just they didn't unleash Sayin. I mean, you guys see your thoughts. I mean, yes, they only came up with 200-and-something yards of total offense, but, you know, Ryan Day was saying it after the game. They didn't turn him loose because why would you? I mean, they were able to keep the game in check. The defense had Arch Manning, you know, throwing worm burners all over the place. So why are you all you have to do is just not take a chance, especially once he made the one big throw and Tate made the one great catch. And all of a sudden, there you go. That's your one big play. You're up. Turn it over to your defense. And just assume that nobody, no matter what we do in our jobs and our lives, none of us are as bad as that as Texas coaching staff is trying to call plays against Ohio State in the red zone. They are just at two games in a row that they are just horrendously awful at figuring out a way to just go a few yards. And they get way too cute and just assume that those guys on the other side of the field, it's going to be okay after you see them. And just go from there. And so we'll see. Satan's going to turn it loose, but what you don't need to right now when you've got that defense full of NFL talents and the running game hasn't even started to work yet. So,
how much credit do you give to Matt Patricia in this whole ordeal?
A lot. I mean, that's the underappreciated thing in college sports is everyone's in the NIL thing and the transfer portal stuff. It's the ability to go from, you know, I mean, a Jim Knowles to a Matt Patricia. It's the ability to head that. I mean, Matt Patricia could be an NFL head coach and probably, maybe not a good one, but it wouldn't be crazy. He's better than 100-and-something current college football head coaches. You got that guy running your defense and getting it all off season with nothing to do but plan on how to make Arch Manning's life miserable. That's almost unfair. I mean, so like, yeah, he did a great job again. With a defense where I still will say that Caleb Downs is probably the best football player in college football, and a whole bunch of new guys, though, they might be talented, but it was a new bunch, and they just came out and had one whale of a game against a really good Texas team, which now, looking forward, you know, Texas has to go to Georgia. They could lose to an Oklahoma, too. That they needed that. I am not buying in that, oh, well, everything's going to be okay. Texas is going to bounce back. That could be a 9-3 team because of this loss.
Pete, we've got a show, Quarterback Deadpool, where each week we each of us have three quarterbacks, myself, JP, our board op Mac, and each week we can drop or add or trade one quarterback. Are you ready to hear the rosters for each of our teams?
Let's go.
We drafted this last week, by the way.
Yeah, and again, these are the 2026 NFL draft eligible quarterback. So the goal is to get the number one pick in the 2026 draft drafted off your team. My team is Drew Aller, Garrett Nussmeier, and Carson Beck. Peterlin okay. has Cade Klubnik, Arch Manning, and Sam Levitt.
Oof.
Mac.
Oh,
Mac.
Pete, on Twitter, I won the poll last week. See, your meaningless week one just ruined my team.
Mac's team was Lenora Sellers, Fernando Mendoza, and Aiden Childs. Who has the best quarterback roster?
So basically what you should do is just go by, you know, aggregate. Like, out of all three of them, who has the combined highest draft slots?
This will also be part of it, correct?
Well, because it's over, because either Arch Manning's the number one pick. Nothing's going to change that. He could be awful. He's still the number one overall draft.
That sounds pretty good. You oofed after it, but that sounds pretty good.
but is he really coming out? I mean, you know, Manning stay in college. You know, he seems to like the college world. It's, money's not really an issue. I think he comes out. I go with the Bill Parcells belief that if you want to play in the NFL, go to the NFL. But you know, that's not a sure thing. If he's coming out, he's coming out. If not, I have said this all off season. I might have said this on the show last week to you, and this was my thing on every radio hit. Carson Beck is good. Everyone forgets after 2023, he was the presumptive number one overall pick.
You did say that last week, by the way. You did, yeah.
And he's got the tools. He wasn't great against him, but that's a killer Notre Dame defense that he was really good against. He was poised. And I'm not going to say I originally thought if Miami wins, it would have been because of Beck was the difference and Carr turned out to be just as good. But Beck has the skills and tools. I don't quite see what the world sees in Nussmeier. I get that he's got the arm and the skills. I'll throw one guy you did not draft. Can I trade Aiden Childs for Nico and Yamilava? I mean,
yes.
He had nothing to work with, and Utah is awesome. That was a great Utah team, but he is not. But you could see just a couple. There were a few flicks of the wrist where they're going to get that guy into an NFL training room or in all the pro days, and they're going to be like, wait a minute, Nico Yamilava might be the most skilled guy of this bunch. He just has to show it, and I don't know if he's going to be able to do that at UCLA.
What was your reaction to Belichick getting just waxed?
Yeah, that was an NFL coach, because my first reaction was, you knew that guy spent the last 6 months designing the first 15-ish or so plays, and they had them down, and they looked like they're about to win the national championship, and then they ran out of ideas because TCU's better. But look, North Carolina has 70 new guys, and again, this goes back to my, you know, get a tune-up in. You know, if you've got 70 new players, you want a game or two where you get everyone on the same page and you get them out there, because TCU, that was a team that had everyone returning from a 9-win team, and they loaded up with a few really good guys from the transfer portal, and they looked the part. So North Carolina, you look at the rest of their schedule, they get Clemson at home. They miss everybody else. They miss Miami. They miss SMU and Florida State and Louisville and Georgia Tech. That is a schedule where even after this loss, if they could somehow pull off an upset over Clemson, which I don't think they'll do, they could still be in the thick of big stuff just because that schedule is just so light and breezy up until November.
Pete, great stuff, buddy. Appreciate you. We'll talk next week leading into a much better week three.
Have a good one, guys.
Pete Futek there on the Fan Hotline. Great stuff with him. We'll react to what he had to say. And a charming or chotch moment for the ages in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Sex, murder, the magic of the movies. You must remember this is a podcast about the secret and forgotten histories of 20th century Hollywood. Follow and listen to You Must Remember This on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.